Hello, good people. My name is George Mahaly, and welcome to episode one of The George Mahaly Show. By day, I am a commercial filmmaker, but here on the show, I share conversations with remarkable people about their area of expertise. This includes, but is not limited to, experts in the worlds of education, entrepreneurship, martial arts, wellness, technology, and filmmaking. On today's show, I have my good friend, Greg Bander. Greg is a competitive Muay Thai martial artist. For anybody who doesn't know or is not familiar with what Muay Thai is, it's a Thai martial art very similar to kickboxing. Greg is a holder of 5 belts in Muay Thai competition, and he's a teacher of Muay Thai based here in Portland, Oregon. In today's conversation, we talk about Greg's origins in Muay Thai. What were the martial arts that he was practicing before he got to Muay Thai? What makes a good coach? What makes a good student? And one of my favorite parts of the show is when we discuss Greg's relationship with fear, specifically how Greg interacts with fear before and during a Muay Thai competition. If you enjoy the show and you want to check out all the links and resources and all the different show notes that we talked about, go to georgemihaly.com and you'll see all that good stuff there. And if you want to get updates for upcoming shows and anything and everything in between, feel free to sign up on the email list as well. Today's show is presented to you by StoryFirm. StoryFirm is a full-service video production company specializing in commercial, documentary, education, and event video content. The work of StoryFirm has generated millions of views for some of the world's biggest brands, including Facebook, Google, Under Armour, T-Mobile, Microsoft, and TEDx, just to name a few. To see some of StoryFirm's work, or if you want to inquire about an upcoming project, check out storyfirm.com, StoryFirm.com. Without further ado, please enjoy my conversation with the incredible Greg Bander.
I like those slippers, man.
Thank you, bro. IKEA, $1.99.
Pro tip.
Anybody can get these. Get them, you know, for everybody in the house, all your guests.
It's a life hack.
Indeed it is. Mr. Greg, thank you so much, bro. Appreciate you being here.
Yeah, dude, thank you.
Just having a little conversation, just a couple bros with headphones on.
Yeah.
Hanging out.
Dude, it's just like a normal Tuesday, man.
Just an everyday early afternoon.
I usually don't talk to people unless I have headphones on and a microphone in front of me. So this is totally natural and comfortable.
Excellent.
And
I carry these in my backpack at all times. Greg, thank you so much. I appreciate you being the first guest on the George Mahaly Show. That's a name that's a work in progress. I don't know if that's going to stick. And if it does, I appreciate you being the, I don't know.
I kind of hope it doesn't stick, and then like it blows up and it gets huge, and then you go back and it's like, look, I was on it before it became the blank show.
Awesome. And for all our guests or guests on YouTube, thank you for joining us. So my name is George Mahaly. I'm a commercial filmmaker and handstand rock climbing movement enthusiast. We're here in Portland, Oregon, and I'm here with Greg Bander, who is a Muay Thai martial arts trainer, fighter, lover of all things martial arts related. Greg, how would you describe yourself kind of like in that Muay Thai mindset or what it is that you do with Muay Thai?
I fight. I compete in Muay Thai. And I coach people to either compete or just get fit or do self-defense. And I use Muay Thai as the kind of vehicle for that.
Awesome. And for those of us who don't know what is Muay Thai, how would you explain that?
Well, you go on Google and you type now. Yeah, Muay Thai is Muay Thai translates to Thai boxing. So a lot of people say I do Muay Thai kickboxing or I do Muay Thai boxing. It's a little bit redundant. We were talking about that before. Mm-hmm. But yeah, so Muay in the Thai language, Muay, M-U-A-Y, means boxing, and then Thai. So it's just Muay Thai boxing. So
and when we say Thai, as in Thailand, like the country
yeah, that's right.
East Asia.
Yeah, not T-I-E, like the drink.
Or a bow.
Or a bow, yeah.
No disrespect.
Or T-Y, like the name. Just so there's no confusion. Mm-hmm. But yeah, so it's the national sport of Thailand. It's been around for thousands of years. It was derived from battlefield art called Krabi Krabong, in which they use they have swords in each hand, and then there's also another weapon that it's called the Mysok, mm-hmm. which is like this wooden block that covers the forearm, and then they use their arms as like kind of shields and weapons. So it's like the stuff you see like Tony Jaa doing.
Mm-hmm. Is that a famous?
Yeah, you know Tony Jaa?
I don't know. Oh wait, I think I've seen some of his movies. So he's a martial arts.
Yeah, he did Ong Bak. Like,
yes, and Ong Bak. I saw that when we were in college. Yeah.
So that's like Muay Boran. Mm-hmm. So that's like one like a step or two removed from what it's kind of evolved to today to be the ring sport, the national sport of Thailand. But yeah, so it's just a martial art essentially, and it's known, people call it the art of eight limbs or the science of eight limbs, because you have two fists, you have two elbows, you have two knees, and then you have two legs to kick. So it utilizes like all of the body's like natural appendages.
Yeah.
Tools as weapons for both offense and defense. So,
and how is Muay Thai different from kickboxing?
So it's similar in a lot of ways, but it's also very like to the untrained eye, it's like very similar. Mm-hmm. But to someone who has spent some time doing it, you'll be able to see the difference pretty easily. But so the easiest way to explain it is that Muay Thai uses elbows and clinch work. So clinch work is essentially like stand up grappling. Like what the closest thing that someone who doesn't know about it would be able to kind of cross reference would be like Greco-Roman wrestling. So it's a lot of grappling where you're standing, where you can knee in the clinch. You pull the idea is to kind of like pull the head down and blast the head with a knee or throw an elbow. Mm-hmm. Kickboxing, there's no elbows at all, and the clinch work is very minimal. It's like you grab and then they usually stop it right there. You might get one knee off.
Do you use elbows in kickboxing?
No elbows.
But you use elbows in Muay Thai?
In Muay Thai, yes. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And the grappling that you mentioned, is there grappling also in kickboxing?
Not really. No. Like I was saying, if there's a clinch, mm-hmm. It's called the clinch. So if there's a clinch, then it's usually broken up like within 1 second.
Mm-hmm. And I'm sorry if I'm like asking questions that are very sound very basic to you, but grappling is another word for wrestling, like stand-up wrestling,
sort
or
of,
could
yeah,
be on the ground,
yeah, yeah, mm-hmm. sort of.
And what is the clinch? Yeah,
yeah, the clinch is clinch work is like clinching is just stand-up grappling, or you could say stand-up wrestling in a sense. Mm-hmm. I mean, wrestling has other kind of connotations where there's other moves that you would do that are kind of not allowed in Muay Thai. And typically wrestling is on the ground. But with Muay Thai, it's all standing. So you can sweep someone or you can dump them there's different ways you can do that are within the rule set of Muay Thai. And that would kind of throw them to the floor, but then you let them get back up and then you fight them again.
Mm-hmm. And, I just realized like we're getting really like into it, and I love learning, because you know I've done a couple classes with you in Muay Thai, but I guess I wanted the people who are watching or listening in to know like why should we be listening to you talk about Muay Thai?
For
like
sure.
What's your background with it? How long have you been practicing? Do you compete?
So as I mentioned before, I went on Google and I just researched a ton of stuff about Muay Thai before I came here. I've been doing it for about 10 years, almost 10 years. I've done other martial arts and stuff in the past, traditional arts. And I actually grew up wrestling. I wrestled for 8 years when I was a kid.
What were the other arts that you did?
Yeah, I did. I did some Wing Chun for a little while.
Kung Fu?
Yeah, it's Kung Fu. That's Chinese Kung Fu. That was the art that Bruce Lee like kind of was used as his foundation to formulate his system called Jeet Kune Do. Mm-hmm. And then I did some Hapkido, which I did when I was studying abroad in Hungary in mm-hmm. college, and you actually came out and visited, which was really a lot of fun.
That was good.
We got some good pictures from those days. And I did some Aikido as well. So I dabbled in a few different traditional arts. Mm-hmm. And then I also did, I've done some Filipino martial arts as well, some
and
Kali.
Aikido and Hapkido, those are both like stand up.
Yeah, the Hapkido is a Korean martial art. Mm-hmm. It deals with like joint locks and kind of some throws and stuff. Mm-hmm. And there's a lot of kicking. Mm-hmm. And then Aikido is, all kind of, I guess it's joint locks and stuff. Mm-hmm. I wasn't a big fan of it.
Sure.
But it there's something beautiful about it. I think they call it the gentle way or something like that. Mm-hmm. It's all, you're using your opponent's like energy and momentum against them. So there's when you see a high level.
Does Tai Chi, like a combative Tai Chi, kind of use the same sort of principles?
I'd say there's definitely similarities. Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's just Tai Chi, I believe is Chinese, and mm-hmm. Aikido is Japanese. Mm-hmm. But they're a little different. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So you were doing those, and then you got drawn into.
Yeah, I moved out to Portland in 2009, in June mm-hmm. of 2009. And
so 9 years ago.
Yeah. Crazy. Yeah. And I had done some Muay Thai just like a little bit before that. And mm-hmm. Maybe 6 months before is when I kind of found out about MMA and the UFC and kind of learned about how like some of those traditional arts were not like the most effective, mm-hmm. Which is kind of what the UFC did. It kind of exposed a lot of that stuff.
The UFC, the Ultimate Fighting Championships, like I'm a big fan of watching it. It's the most popular mixed martial arts
promotion.
Yeah. That's the correct terminology, yeah. Right? And you were just saying that the UFC exposed which of the martial arts were the most effective?
Yeah. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
So why is that?
What do you mean? Why? Like,
because like for people maybe who don't watch the UFC or who have seen it just a couple times, the UFC, as opposed to boxing, it allows the fighters to have a wider kind of like ability to utilize different mm-hmm. martial arts, because you don't have to, like as in boxing, you can only use your hands. Right. And there's some grappling in there as well.
Yeah,
just clinch and stuff like
a little
that.
Dirty boxing.
And but punch. Like you're not like, as opposed to like Muay Thai, like you can kick, you can use your elbows, you can use your fists, you can use your foot. In the UFC, not only can you do all of those things, but you can also wrestle with the opponent on the ground,
right.
Which is something you can't do in Muay Thai.
Right.
Right.
Yeah. So it's mixed martial arts. Mm-hmm. So it's just like what that literally means. Like it's just a mix of all the martial arts essentially.
But it's like almost anything goes, but there still are
there's some rules. Yeah, yeah. Yeah. No eye pokes, no groin shots,
small
no shots
manipulation,
in the back of the head.
Right? Like finger.
Yeah. No. Yeah. No like finger bending. Mm-hmm. That would be bad. Yeah. A lot of broken.
There's
fingers.
A lot of things that look really painful. I mean, even like what you do, you know, we'll get into that a little bit later. But so the UFC allows the fighters to use any martial art that they want within a small set of rules, like as you just mentioned. And so you were paying more attention to the UFC as a mixed martial arts. And you recognize that Muay Thai was something that was found to be a much more effective martial art than Hapkido, Aikido, and
than Hapkido and Aikido mm-hmm. or any really. So yeah, so I think I was just drawn to the striking arts because mm-hmm. I like the striking arts. It's cool. They look cool. They're fun mm-hmm. to see. When you see like a big knockout or something, it's like sensational.
So the striking arts are like boxing, kickboxing.
Yeah, boxing, kickboxing, Muay Thai. I mean, there was mm-hmm. guys who were doing karate. There's some mm-hmm. guys in the current era who have made karate like more effective within the MMA rule set as well. So I was just drawn to that. Mm-hmm. And I saw Muay Thai as like the pinnacle of those arts. Mm-hmm. So that was kind of how I guess chose it, but not really, because when I first moved here, I wanted to do, I started doing Wing Chun when I moved here, cause I just thought it was cool. I always liked Kung Fu movies growing up and mm-hmm. stuff. So I just always wanted to be like a ninja. That was my,
Enter the Dragon,
yeah,
man. That's
Enter the
like
Dragon, yeah.
One of the top movies of all time. Still,
yeah,
it still holds up. Bruce Lee.
It's one of the best.
Yeah. So you were drawn to that, and you found a school that was teaching Muay Thai here?
Yeah, so initially I went there due to they were doing Filipino martial arts, mm-hmm. which I always thought was cool. I learned about that through, I don't even know, I guess. I mean, Game of Death was one of the first movies where I saw it with mm-hmm. Dan Inosanto.
Dan Inosanto is like of Bruce Lee lineage.
Yeah,
right?
Yeah, he was like one of Bruce Lee's teachers, mm-hmm. but also Bruce Lee taught him. And then he's kind of one of the people who carried on like the Jeet Kune Do teachings. Mm-hmm. But he's of Filipino descent, I believe.
Mm-hmm. And Manny Pacquiao as well.
Yeah, Manny Pacquiao as well.
Does he come from any like Filipino martial arts background?
I don't know. I know he does boxing. I mean, yeah. I imagine he's familiar with it. Mm-hmm.
One of the best like boxers.
Of our era.
Time. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. So, but yeah, so I started doing that. Almost exclusively not really exclusively. That was just my focus at this gym that I found. And then I also was doing Muay Thai. And then just over time.
So Muay Thai and Filipino martial arts at the same gym.
And I was doing jiu-jitsu as well. I would go there.
You were doing some capoeira at that time also,
yeah,
right?
I was doing a little capoeira here and there too, yeah. Yeah, it's true. I kind of forgot about that. Mm-hmm. When I first kind of moved out here, I was like, I would work until I was working at a restaurant, and I'd work until like 4, and I would just go straight to the gym, and I'd be at the gym from like 4:30 to 9:30 like every single night.
Damn.
Yeah, I did that for like, I don't know, 2 years, like a year and a half, because like that was it.
And you were there as a student, or were you also
during that time I was a student students. The whole time. Mm-hmm. Yeah, for the first like year and a half I was only student. About 2 years in I started teaching a little bit. Mm-hmm. Which I in my opinion was probably a little too soon. Mm-hmm. But anyway, yeah, so I start Muay Thai. I just found I found that I liked it more, and I started gravitating towards that more and wanting to do the Muay Thai training more. And I found that it kind of hit all of the needs that I was looking for: self-defense, fitness for sure, mm-hmm. the mental focus, the discipline. There's a lot of respect involved in it. And then also there's a competitive outlet where once you start sparring, you start applying in a live situation. You realize like, oh, a lot of this stuff that I thought would work maybe wouldn't work. And also, how am I going to behave under pressure when someone's actually trying to hit me? Mm-hmm. So you learn a lot about yourself. So
interesting. And so you were mentioning that you were training for, 5 hours a day. In that sort of time frame. Yeah, that sounds like a lot of time.
That's
right?
What I was doing, man. Yeah.
What does that 5 hours look like? Are you coming in and there's a class that's for like cardio conditioning, then there's like a strength training, then there's like skill work, or
yeah, I don't remember exactly
the
schedule.
Kicking and punching for 5 hours.
No. I remember I would come in, I would get there an hour before classes, and I would do my own stuff, mm-hmm. which was like, it would be really like monotonous stuff where I was, my coach at the time was like, you're flaring your elbow and you throw the cross, so stand next to a wall or a bag and just throw the cross without. Right. So the bag's right there. So you can't flare your elbow. Mm-hmm. So I'd throw like 50 on that side, throw 50 jabs. I'd throw 1-2s. I'd throw like single kicks on the bag.
1-2s, like jab hook. Cross. Yeah. So different cross, variations of a boxing drill.
Yeah. Yeah. Stuff mm-hmm. like that. And I would just work these things to try to dial in my technique, because I knew that ultimately like having good technique and good habits early on would lead to longer term results. Mm-hmm. So I was doing a lot of monotonous stuff for the first like hour and a half of each of those like 4 or 5 hour sessions.
Repetition is the mother of skill.
That's right.
As they say, right? Yeah. And so now we were talking a little bit before this that you hold 4 different belts because you compete in Muay Thai competitions. So kind of like how did it go that you were training at that gym, you were training a couple different martial arts, to now where you primarily focus on Muay Thai, and there's another gym that you moved to, right?
Yeah, I moved to, I was training at a gym that's actually, it's no longer has this name, but it was called the Source Academy. Mm-hmm. That was down in Tigard. And then I moved gyms to Portland Thai Boxing and Martial Arts, which is here in Portland. It's just more of a competition gym. But also, I mean, there's classes for everybody. So mm-hmm. It has kind of a rep in Portland as like, oh, it's a fighter gym, but it's really not like that. A lot of the people who come in now, they always comment like, you know, I really like the environment here. I like the people. Everyone's so open and friendly and helpful. And that's like the biggest compliment you can get, I think, as a school of anything. So yeah, I guess I just transitioned. I started sparring and I wanted to compete. I felt that I had two fights at the other gym.
Fights meaning that you competed in a fight on behalf of that gym?
Yeah, I guess. Right? I mean,
like you weren't actually like fighting people inside
no,
the gym.
No. Yeah, correct. That's correct. Good. Yeah. That's a good way to explain it. Better way to explain it. So I competed against somebody from another gym. It was consensual. And I won both. That was great. But I just felt that, you know, if I wanted to continue to do that, it would be in my best interest to go to switch gyms. And I knew about Portland Thai Boxing and I knew that they had a good reputation. So I did that. And I've since, you know, over the years, I've, like you said, I won 4 amateur titles. Most recently, 3 weeks ago, I won a WBC amateur title. Mm-hmm. So that's pretty cool. Just gonna try to keep doing that.
And I want to talk about the students that go to the gyms too, but like you just mentioned, like the competitions that you've fought in, for like Muay Thai competition, what does it look like? Because I know in UFC, and correct me if I'm misspeaking, most matches are 3 rounds, 5 minutes long, mm-hmm. but then title matches are up to 5 rounds that are 5 minutes long. With Muay Thai, what does it look like?
So professional Muay Thai in Thailand, well, I guess all Muay Thai in Thailand is professional because they don't have amateur, but so Muay Thai in Thailand in the state, it's kind of like, it depends on how in depth I want to go. Basically, traditionally it was 5 3-minute rounds, with a 2-minute rest.
In between rounds,
yeah. And there's recently been more promotions popping up. They're doing 3 3-minute rounds with, I believe, a 1-minute rest. Mm-hmm. Maybe there's 2 minutes actually, even in those. I'm not even sure. I should know. I competed in one of them when I was over there.
In Thailand.
Yeah.
We'll talk about that too.
Yeah, yeah. And so in the States, it's 2-minute rounds with a 1-minute rest. So
3 2-minute rounds, or
so non-title fights are 3 2-minute rounds.
3 2-minute rounds,
and title fights are 5 2-minute rounds, mm-hmm. and that's amateur. Mm-hmm. And professional, it's 3-minute rounds in the States. So
it's a lot of time.
Yeah, well, 2 minutes doesn't people think like, oh, that's not much, but it's like, I don't know. There's a lot going on. There's a lot of adrenaline. There's you're under
fear
duress.
Of death.
Yeah, fear. Yeah, there's a lot of fear and just physical exertion. So it seemed those 2 minutes seem longer, or 3 minutes seem longer too.
Where, like, how do you think about fear? Like, is it a something that motivates you? Is it something that you try to avoid? Is it like where does it kind of like lie in your mind? Like,
yeah,
you think,
man, about it, that's
with
a good question.
To martial arts, yeah.
Yeah, well, in regards to martial arts, but I mean, for me now, like I use Muay Thai is my metaphor. It's like how I navigate life. I think the reason I wanted to fight was because I was so afraid, dude. I was so afraid to do it. It was terrifying. I looked, like, when I first started training, I was like, dude, look at these, like, people who fight, they're crazy, man. I'm never going to do that. But then I found that I was like, oh, I'm actually like not bad at this. Like, and then I'd spar and I'd do well. And I'd be like, maybe I should try to fight. But I was so afraid. And so I ended up kind of facing that fear. And obviously now I've had 15 fights.
15?
Yeah. And which isn't, in the grand scheme of Muay Thai, it's not a lot at all. But, you know, I mean, for somebody who was like terrified to do it. I don't know. I mean, yeah, I think fear, at least in terms of in the framework of like Muay Thai or competition, it's very good. It's natural. Like, you should be afraid. Even like sitting down to like do this, like there's a little bit of fear that I have, and had, I feel like I'm more relaxed now, but it you can use it to kind of sharpen your focus. And having that is natural because it means that you want to do well. And the fear, I think, comes from fear of, you know, doing a bad job or being injured or whatever, you know?
Does it exist like when you're in the ring at a higher level?
That's interesting. I don't know. I don't, I mean, yeah, there's like, it's not really fear. It's different. It's more just like alertness. You're just like aware that, like, you know, if they throw a big shot and it misses, but it was close, it's like, oh, that one would have hurt. Like, don't let that one land. But it's not like, oh crap, I don't want to get hit. Like, I'm afraid to get hit by that now. Mm-hmm. I mean, I guess there's a certain amount of fear. Yeah. Mm-hmm. I guess maybe saying it's elevated is a good way to phrase it, but
maybe it changes.
Yeah. It changes, right? The way you use it changes. Mm-hmm. And the way it affects you changes, I would say.
And it's a different experience when you're competing versus sparring in the gym.
Oh, totally different. Yeah. Yeah. I think, people who you run into problems like training with people who have never fought, who want to like spar harder because mm-hmm. they think that it's the same thing, but it's not the same thing. So they kind of will move in a way that's maybe not totally like realistic, for the fight. So yeah. But yeah, they're definitely two different things.
How does your training look, like, say, day to day? Like, you're just training to become better and more skilled versus if you're training leading up to a match?
Yeah, I mean, day to day, more skilled. I attend classes at the gym. Mm-hmm. For me personally, I watch a lot. I just like watch fights all the time. Mm-hmm. Like, especially when I'm leading up to a fight, I watch a lot more fights. And I watch just Muay Thai fights, like, and from the golden era as well. Golden era was in like the late 80s to mid 90s. There were just tons of like really high level fighters. Mm-hmm. So like last night I watched like, I don't know, like four or five fights before bed. They also, it's weird, like, it caught the music and stuff. You've heard the music at the mm-hmm. some of the events.
Yeah, you know, I'm kind of curious, like, what is the history behind that? Like, why? I wish I could play it right now.
Yeah,
but it's very distinct. Like, you know, you're at a Muay Thai
event. It kind of sounds like this. Do do do. So yeah, now you got an idea.
I think that'll come across well. Yeah.
Yeah, yeah. Somebody was telling me
Muay Thai music beatboxer right there.
Yeah, right. Somebody. Yeah, we should sample that and like make a song out of it. I'm surprised no one's done that. I'm sure it's been
done.
I
bet it exists. Yeah.
I don't actually know. That's a good question. And right when you asked, I was like, oh man, I don't know the answer.
Because there's a music that's played as the competitors mm-hmm. walk into the ring, and then traditionally you'll also walk around the ring and
you seal the ring. It's called sealing the yeah. ring. It's all just kind of like for protection and good luck. Mm-hmm. A lot of so Thailand is a Buddhist primarily a Buddhist country. Mm-hmm. So a lot of like what they do is just for like protection and good luck and kind of I don't know. The music though does it, there's something to, if you listen to the music from round one to round four or five, it picks up, the tempo picks up. Mm-hmm. And that's because the music kind of influences the pace of the fight. Mm-hmm. It's done live at the stadiums that they do it live.
And this in professional matches, because like I know that the music is very much a big thing. Like I saw a Muay Thai, we went to a big competition in Bangkok when I was there.
Do you go to Lumpini?
Yeah.
You went, so you know that stadium doesn't exist anymore.
Really?
They moved it.
Wow.
Yeah.
That was a big spot.
Yeah.
Yeah. Another thing too about Thailand, I remember this. And so you've trained now in Thailand on three separate occasions.
Yeah, three
right?
times. Yep.
I don't know if this sounds like a silly question, other than the fact, of course, that's like where the martial art is from, but why do people train there? Is that where some of the best trainers and camps are in the world? Or
yeah, no, for sure.
Something about the environment too.
Yeah, definitely the environment as well. Mm-hmm. I think mostly it's
like weather and stuff.
Yeah,
like
the humidity and mm-hmm. the heat. Your muscles, you just feel better, man. Mm-hmm. It's crazy. Like I'll up my train. You know, part of it, it's the volume, dude. It's people go. It's a hot, like a traincation, training holiday.
Yeah,
where,
I've heard that term recently.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. You just go and you don't have any responsibility other than training, mm-hmm. and they train 5 to 6 hours a day.
Two different sessions.
Yeah, two sessions. Yeah. One in the morning, one in the evening, or in the afternoon, rather. And each one's like 2.5 to 3 hours long. Mm-hmm. So yeah, it's just like a good way to like kind of immerse yourself in the culture of Muay Thai, and you get a real sense for the art, and you kind of fast track your training. Because you just, that kind of volume, we just don't, in the West, we just don't have time for
it. There are, of course, really good coaches out there too.
Yeah, for
right?
sure. Yeah. Yeah. There's some that are not so good, but you gotta do your research, do your due diligence and find.
It leads me to like a question that I have is like, how would someone approach finding a good school if they were thinking about like, okay, like I've been training a lot here in the States or wherever they happen to live, but they know that they want to take a trip out to Thailand and find a good school. Like, how would you recommend they look for a good school, or do you have any schools that you would recommend they get in touch with?
Yeah, for sure. I mean, there's
or a couple, don't get in touch with.
Yeah, no. Well, I won't say any of that, but there's a couple I can recommend, and then I can make maybe a couple recommendations on like what they could do. There used to be this forum. This is how I found it, because I did a ton of research before I went the first time. There was this forum called MuayThailand.com, and that was like a great resource. And they took it down. I don't really know. I think they took it down because the message boards just turned into like just total nonsense. People just saying like ridiculous stuff. And some of the characters on there were really funny, but there is some really good information on there, but there's a lot of stuff out there. There's a couple, there's a good website and a blog, and the guy also, if you're interested in Muay Thai videos, just getting like a crash course on some of the fighters from the golden era, he does these highlight videos. It's MuayThaiScholar.com.
We'll put that in the show notes.
Yeah, that'd be
cool.
It'll
be show notes, by the way.
That guy, his name's Aaron John, and I actually messaged him the other day on Instagram asking him a question about recommending specific style of fighter for me to like check out from the golden era. And I listed off a few. Like I know quite a few, but I just thought, you know, this guy's like he's kind of like an authority on it, so maybe he would know some that I didn't. And he got back to me and like gave me a whole list of names, and it was really cool. So awesome. Yeah, dude's really cool. He's got really good content on there. So that would be a good resource. He has some training. He has some
MuayThaiScholar.com.
Yep. He has some like training camp descriptions that he's been to. He's spent a lot of time there. But then also just like Google searching and reading about it. The two that I recommend are Sitchapo Muay Thai, and they have a Instagram that's really popular. I think it's at Sitchapo_Muay Thai.
Do you know any clues on how to spell that?
Yeah, Sitjapho. Sitchapo. The head trainer there, Pisit Kambang, he goes by, his nickname is F, Crew F. I don't know, man. I don't know how to say it. He's like the best Muay Thai practitioner and coach that I've ever encountered.
Awesome. So you trained with him?
I trained with him for a shorter time than I would have liked.
This was in Thailand?
Yeah, in Thailand, yeah. And that gym is great, man. Just really, really technical, really good. They can do any style, but they're known for their Fima style, which means it's a technique. Muay Fima. Like technical fighters. Another one that I really recommend is Sit Mun Chai Gym. I had a really good experience there. I've been there a couple times. Really like family feel, and the trainers are good, and they put effort into you learning the technique as well. So those two I think are my two top picks. I haven't been to that many, but I've done quite a bit of research, and I've heard good things and experienced good things about those.
Oh, good
gyms.
To spread the awareness of good schools.
Yeah, for right? sure.
Yeah. No, because it's like, I know that, I've met different people from different parts of the world. And actually, this is something that I wonder about too. I did a workshop with Ido Portal. He's a movement teacher and kind of like a well-known kind of figure, and I guess like kind of the strength and conditioning world, especially for the work that he's done with MMA fighter Conor McGregor. But last summer I did a week-long camp with Ido and a couple other teachers that he works with, but the workshop was in Europe, and there were some students that were there from Sweden. Actually, he's got a following kind of all over the world, but some of the students from Sweden, they were there, of course, for Ido's work, but they were also, I came to find out, very capable in a couple different martial arts, jiu-jitsu, and then also in Muay Thai. And I came to talk to one of them and was just kind of curious about, like, you know, how did they come about training this art and what's the scene like in Sweden? And they said that there's some pretty really talented fighters and then also really well-established schools in the Netherlands. Like, where is Muay Thai kind of, because of course it's pretty popular here in the United States and of course in Thailand, but like there are pockets like across the world where it's like a really popular scene, and even more now, like,
yeah, the Swedish scene is really, it's Sweden, really good in Sweden. Yeah. But I would say like in the Muay Thai world, it's not very popular in the United States. Mm-hmm. The most popular countries I would say are probably,
just turn that a little,
me,
sorry, yeah, cool,
the most popular countries I would say are probably the UK, Australia, France, Italy, Sweden's another one.
Mm-hmm.
Those are probably the biggest. I'm probably forgetting something right now, but yeah, those are the biggest that come to mind.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, but I know I like every time I've been to Thailand, I've met a ton of Swedish people,
mm-hmm,
and people from Norway and just like other in like Scandinavia.
To go there,
yeah, that's true. That's
countries
true.
Too.
But there's also a lot of like Thai trainers that go to those countries to teach,
mm-hmm,
and they'll spend a month or two there, or some of them live there. Like at Sitrapo, it's run by Crew F, like I was saying, mm-hmm, but his brother, Crew O, they're twins. He ended up moving to Sweden. So they used to run the gym kind of together, I think.
Wow.
But now his brother lives in Sweden. So he I don't think he trains coaches full time, but I think he does coach at a gym out there as well.
Mm-hmm. I've been to a couple classes that you've taught, that you run here in Portland, Portland Thai Boxing. Maybe could you talk a little bit about like how many students like the school has, but then is there like a rough figure that you would say as to how many students come to Muay Thai and train for maybe fitness, or just train to become more capable as the self-defense people,
yeah,
versus people who come to Muay Thai, who train and then end up competing?
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, I think fitness and self-defense is 90%+
mm-hmm,
of the people. The percentage that wants to compete, let me think if we have, I'm just thinking like if we have like, let's say 100 people,
100 students.
Yeah, yeah, let's just say that that's, there's probably at our school, maybe 15%, we'll say, are people who compete.
Mm-hmm.
And
how many matches will someone have in a year?
Depends. Yeah. And I think our gym is probably more of an exception. Like that 15% would be high, mm-hmm, for most places, at least in this area. But then there's some like MMA gyms that are like focused solely on MMA where they have a higher percentage of competition or people who are interested in competition. So yeah, I don't know. Sorry, what was that? What was the last question?
No, I mean, it was kind of like a two-parter, like what, like you were just explaining how, what percentage of students end up competing versus just training. And then, yeah, in like a typical class, like what does a class look like for anybody who hasn't been, who's like, oh, you know, like I've been thinking about doing kickboxing,
yeah,
and Muay Thai, like sounds like something I would want to try.
For sure. So, a couple things. I just thought of something that I was thinking of earlier that, yeah, kind of is in relation to this, about like looking for a school. How do you find a,
yeah,
school? So you were talking about in relation to Thailand, but in the States, I think it's maybe even more relevant. Mm-hmm. And I think that if you're somebody who's interested in like finding martial arts or doing self-defense, and this is something that you're going to like, I don't know if you know this, but do you know our good friend from college, Lance?
Yeah, Lance Miller.
Yes.
Yeah, just his birthday like a couple weeks,
yeah,
ago.
Yeah, yeah. So he recently joined a Muay Thai gym in New York City, and I'm super happy about it.
That's
and
awesome.
Yeah, he and I were talking, and he wanted to do some Krav Maga. Mm-hmm. And I was kind of like
Israeli.
Yeah, it's an Israeli self-defense art.
Yeah,
yeah, it's used. What's used by the IDF, the Israeli Defense Force.
Mm-hmm.
So it's like a. I can get into a little bit, but it's basically just like a no frills, like kind of disable your attacker, mm-hmm, like as quickly as possible and exit to safety. But anyway, besides the point, I was talking to him about finding a school and about
in New York City.
Yeah, New York City. There's tons of really, really high level, like the best in the world for any art that you could want in New York City. And so he was like really wanted to do Krav Maga for whatever reason. He had this idea about it. And he was like, oh, I'm going to go do this class. And I was like, look, man, like don't just join, right? Go to multiple schools, try out a few different places and see which one's a good fit. Because ultimately, when choosing a school or choosing an art or a school or both, it's a long-term time investment to be able to really truly apply it. So you want it to be a good fit for you. You don't want to just jump into the first thing that you're going to do and or that you're going to try. So he went to the Krav Maga class, and then he was like, all right, you know, I liked it, but I'm going to go to this other Muay Thai gym because, you know, you seem, I mean, obviously I'm biased. I like Muay Thai.
Sure.
But he went to it and he loved it, and he ended up signing up there. And it's, and I know the gym, it's a very, very legit gym. It's Koban's gym. Koban is one of the fighters from the golden era in Thailand who moved to New York City and opened a gym. It's super legit. And so Lance now trains there, and he texts me with me sometimes about like Muay Thai questions. And I was like, dude, anytime you want to talk about Muay Thai, obviously I love talking about it. But so yeah, that was really cool. But anyway, so what the classes look like. Yeah, we do a little warm up together as a group, and then I mostly teach foundation classes, so like beginner classes. And so when somebody comes or when someone comes in, that's like to our gym, typically I'll be like the instructor who they're going to be dealing with for their first like month or two. We'll do kind of like some stance and some footwork, some basic kind of like techniques, some basic punches, like how to throw the kick properly. And then you'll probably partner up with someone, and we'll work those techniques with like gear on in a controlled setting where one person's kind of leading, one person's hitting, and one person's kind of holding. And then we'll do some like bag work. And then sometimes I'll do like a conditioning set to kind of round out the class.
So like your foundations class, and perhaps, I don't know, I don't want to make a generalization, but like a foundations class at other Muay Thai gyms, somebody can go to that class without ever having thrown a punch or a kick.
Yeah.
And they'll come away after a certain amount of time, like learning the fundamentals of those two.
Yeah, for sure.
Two things.
For sure.
Is there...
After a very short amount of time, if I'm your instructor.
And is it kind of open to people of all fitness levels? Is there any sort of...
Yeah. Yeah, I think so. Absolutely.
Like how, what are the age ranges of like your students?
At Portland Thai Boxing, the age range is usually like late teens to 50s, probably 40s.
Pretty big spread. Yeah.
Yeah. Pretty big spread. I also teach at, Matt Dishman Community Center in the mornings on Monday, Wednesday, and
it's
Saturday.
Also here in Portland, Oregon.
Yeah. It's also here in Portland. And that age range is actually tends to be a little older. But that's just the type of people who go to the community center. So there's some people who are like in their 60s that do that pretty regularly.
With a lot of different, like, I don't know what category to put it into. It's just like that one word, like movement. It's so buzz and so easy to use that to lump a lot of different practices, you know, whether it's gymnastics, whether it's acrobatics, whether it's tumbling, whether it's contortion. But a trend that I've seen in the past couple years, and one that I've even participated in, is having a coach work with you online. It's usually, from my experiences, been oriented around like giving the student drills and exercises, so creating a program for the student, and then using some combination of video and maybe some written feedback from the student and from the teacher to kind of evaluate how the student is developing or not developing or progressing.
Or regressing,
yeah. Is that at all... does that exist at all in Muay Thai? Is there anybody teaching online?
Yeah, people do it. I'm not a big fan of it. I think the problem arises because you kind of need, like I said, it's a sport ultimately. You kind of need someone else to work with. And then there's also equipment that you kind of need, like a heavy bag. If you have a heavy bag hanging somewhere in your home, then that could be, that could work. And you can shadow box the techniques, which means like you just do it in the air. But I think having someone else to work with is kind of important.
Both from learning and just enjoying.
It's more enjoyable. I mean, like how when you've done that, like what's been your experience versus like going to like, because I know you go to the rock climbing gym and you do some you do some movement over there as well as climbing. Like what's the experience for you versus like doing it there versus doing it here, like for the
if I'm training at home versus in the gym, I always prefer training in the gym. It's just the mindset is ready for it. If I have to do something at home, I still will. You know, I have a couple apparatuses. We have some gymnastics mats that we use and some hanging tools. We've got some rings up and stuff like that. But I didn't know if you were actually going to ask about like training alone or versus in a group, you know, like, cause there's certain things that like when you train them by yourself and you're working a very specific skill, it's okay sometimes to do something.
To be alone, just to be by yourself. But even just like the environment of being in the gym, I would assume is kind of preferable just cause
it feels better.
Sure. There's just people around. There's good energy around.
Yeah, more motivating.
Yeah.
Yeah. And if there are groups and classes, like I prefer to work in groups and classes too, you know. There's just certain stuff that I don't mind training alone, but martial arts, like, you're not fighting yourself in a way.
You are in a, in a way too.
Yeah, there's obstacles to overcome for sure.
But having someone to work with is... You don't know if it's applicable unless you are able to apply it, and you're not able to try to apply it unless you have someone to apply it with.
A little bit of a segue, but one of the things that I noticed, and this is maybe just also your background too, you've got a very nice selection of music that you play in your classes. How do you kind of feel about like music during training, during class? Is that something that helps the student think about something less or more? Like
Well, it's kind of music, it's funny you said. This guy who just recently joined at the gym told me, he was like, dude, he was like, not gonna lie, man, like part of the reasons I joined was because I really liked the music you guys were playing, and it was, he was taking my classes, so he just liked the music that I picked. So I was like, that was like probably the biggest compliment I'd gotten all week about Muay Thai. But I don't know, I think music can influence. I mean, at the end of the day, the training is the training, but I think the music can kind of influence your kind of approach to it and your energy towards it. But I don't know if it's necessarily like essential. But I mean, with Muay Thai, like we were talking about before, that music that they play is like part of the sport in Thailand. There's a lot of talk here in the States and just in other promotions that are coming up about maybe not having the music because it's a little bit kind of grating, and people who don't understand it are just like, this is annoying.
Which it's not top 40. It's
right,
not
here.
A big boxing competition.
Exactly.
But
I think for training, I like using music. Like when I run, I always have headphones and I run. I know some people like to run without music, but I just like it. It motivates me. So I think I try to play music in my classes that motivates me.
And I know that you've got a fight coming up in a couple weeks, right?
Yeah, a week and a half.
Yeah, so it's like end of October right now when we're recording, and your fight's in a week and a half.
Yeah, November 10th.
10 days from now. Wow. So like one of the things too that I know, competitions are held based on... Yeah, that's so soon. Are based on certain ranges of weight that you have to fall into, just like boxing, just like MMA, UFC. How does that kind of impact your training and your lifestyle? Like you pay a lot of attention, I'm imagining, to your nutrition, and then is there a protocol that you have around weight cutting that comes closer to the match as well?
Yeah, that's like the biggest thing that I don't like about it, to be honest, because it kind of, it forces you to be really disciplined with your day-to-day life. And that discipline is good in some cases, but it's also, I don't know, we only have one life, you know, so it's there's something to be said about just enjoying like the little things, like eating, you know, having that piece of cake when you want it, or having, you know, that dessert, or eating, getting the steak or the burger or something. But that said, there's protocol that I kind of follow, that I've kind of learned from talking to different people and doing my own research and listening to podcasts, and I've kind of made it work for me. Mm-hmm. So yeah, and like I said, that for me is probably like the toughest thing. Like the training and stuff, I kind of have down now. I've been doing it for long enough that I know how like mentally draining the training and then physically draining the training is going to be. But the diet is just tough because it's, I don't know, it kind of sucks.
How much difference is there between the weight that you compete at and then the weight that you walk around at like day to day?
Yeah, it's, well, so recently I've decided, since I got back from this last trip in Thailand, I decided I'm going to be more disciplined with my diet. Mm-hmm. Not that I was like ever eating crazy, like not clean or anything, but like I said, like if I wanted to have that extra whatever, I would just have it and just be like, yeah, I'll just, or I would overeat or something. Mm-hmm. And I would just say, oh, I'll just, you know, once it comes time to like, once I have a fight book, then I'll start eating clean. And now I'm kind of like doing that. I'm eating clean more frequently. Mm-hmm. So I'm walking at a lower weight. I decided like, you know, I'm 30, almost 31. Next month I turn 31 and the window is closing fast for me to compete. Mm-hmm. So I just decided, you know, I've got, you know, maybe four at most of competition, probably not even four. So I've got the rest of my life to eat whatever I want, you know? Mm-hmm. So I want to try to like, so right now I'm walking at a lower weight. So when I cut, like this next fight on the 10th is same day weigh-in. So the protocol changes if you weigh in the day before or if you weigh in the day of the fight. You want to cut less weight if you're weighing in closer to the fight, right? So the day of, you cut weight, meaning like cut out, do like a water cut where you sweat out the weight. So I'm only going to cut a few pounds at most.
Like 3 or 4, something like that?
Yeah, or less. Mm-hmm. So I'm just walking at a lower weight. I'm just trying to eat clean, keep my weight down. And I feel good. Like I'm not like drained and trained. A lot of times, like if I'm dieting real hard, I'll mm-hmm. start training. And I start just feeling lightheaded or just not feeling strong. And then there's that balance of like, well, mm-hmm. maybe it's better just actually do the water cut and not, you know, so you can get more out of training and kind of eat more now. So just, you got to kind of find what works for you. I think I found a pretty good balance mm-hmm. since I've been doing it a few times.
Awesome. And, I don't know if we were talking about this, but is Muay Thai under consideration for 2020 Tokyo with the Olympics?
I think it's supposed to be. Mm-hmm. I think, I don't know if it's confirmed, but I think it may be confirmed. Yeah, I just met a girl at the WBC tournament who, I can't remember her last name. Her name's Nicole. Mm-hmm. But she's 15 years old. She's already won like a
1-5.
Yeah, 1-5. Yeah. She's won a world title at the IFMA, the IFMA, which is International Federation of Muay Thai Association or something like that. I don't even know what it stands for. But it's essentially like the world championships of Muay Thai. She won a gold medal there. And this is like competing against the highest level people in the world.
Which actually reminds me, one of the other things too that I wanted to mention too about like the classes that I went to and the thing that I observed about the students, like the split between men and women, there was a large amount of the class was women, mm-hmm. right?
Yeah, there's something. I was talking to somebody about this recently, about like women tend to be drawn to Muay Thai. Hmm. And I don't know what it is. I think maybe it's something about like the impact of like hitting something is like empowering, or I don't. And also like Muay Thai's hard, man. And I think women tend to be like just tougher mentally than men. And so maybe they just find like they're able to like draw that out even more. Mm-hmm. in themselves, so they're drawn to it. There's a lot of really good female fighters around the world and from the States as well. So, and I really like it, man. I think it's great when I see women that are training and that are good and that like take it seriously. So
it's awesome. Yeah. And are like the matches that you compete in or the bigger professional matches, are those broadcast in different like mediums? I know that there's recordings all oftentimes of your fights, right?
Yeah. I'll usually have somebody record it.
A couple of your matches. Yeah, man. Yeah. Still want to make it out to the next one.
Yeah, if you can, that'd be great. Thank you so much for doing that. It's like such a help, man. It really is. And it's to have like a professional level quality like recording of it. It really helps to be able to like watch, because I always watch my fights a lot mm-hmm. after and kind of analyze and break it down. So yeah, I think it just depends on the promotion. I think this next one will be streaming it live on Facebook.
Oh, cool.
It's up at Muay Thai Iron, and it's spelled I-Y-A-R-I-N. Tony Deva is like the head coach up there and the promoter for the event. So he's getting some like cool, some cool people.
And this is going to be in Washington.
Yeah. This one's up in Seattle and Ballard. Yeah. Yeah.
Okay, Seattle.
Yeah. So if you type in Muay Thai Iron, the way that I spelled it, on Google Maps, it's at their school. They just moved to a bigger school. So that's where they're going to have the event. But yeah, there's kind of some cool stuff going on. He's sending people that he's sending three people to Thailand. They're going to have judges that judge based on like performance and style. They have like a certain amount of criteria that they're going based off of. And the last time they did that, I actually ended up winning a trip. So
yeah,
they,
that's the last time that you went to train there, right?
No, no. I went since then. Yeah, yeah.
Yeah.
But that was when I fought and I broke my foot in the second fight there. So that was a bummer. So I was out training for a little bit. But hopefully that doesn't happen again. But yeah, so there's some cool stuff going on with this event. He's got like a this guy. I actually don't know his actual name. He goes his Instagram is Siu Dao, but he's like this Muay Thai person who I believe lives in the States, but he travels a lot to do seminars with like pretty high profile people. But he's going to be the commentator. So I think they're going to do a like Facebook Live or YouTube Live with him doing commentary, which is cool. I've never had one of my fights have commentary before, so should be good.
That sounds great.
Yeah.
I want to be respectful of your time and we'll probably be wrapping up soon, but I wanted to ask you because I know that you've been a really dedicated student for many years for Muay Thai, and you've been to a couple different schools, so you've trained with different capable practitioners and you've had different teachers as well. What do you think, maybe I'll ask first about the student, like what do you think makes a good student?
Man, I don't know. It's hard to say. Just, you know, to kind of not exactly quote, but kind of like reference Bruce Lee, you got to empty your cup, you know, try to be open to the instruction. And I think actually one thing is to try to copy people, try to use your eyes, look around at what the other people are doing that maybe have more experience and try to copy them. Cause a lot of times people think that they're doing one thing, but they're, maybe they see a video of themselves later and they're like, oh, I thought my hand was up, but it's like down here, you know? So try to look at what the other people are doing and just be honest with yourself about, try to be honest with yourself about what it is, like how you're moving, you know? And also just be open to the instruction that you receive.
And, with the teachers that you've had, and I know with Portland Thai Boxing, like the teacher that you have there, the lead instructor of the gym and the owner of the gym, Jeremy, he's been a good teacher for of yours for several years. Is there any kind of characteristics that you think about that you kind of, that you identify a good teacher with?
Yeah, I think, well, it kind of depends. I think to be, for at least in relation to Muay Thai, but I think in any type of competition art, even like climbing, if you have a coach for climbing, right? If you're going to compete, I think there has to be, like a deeper kind of connection, emotional connection. There's got to be this trust that gets built where you trust that like the advice that they're giving you, like for example, as a fighter, the advice that I hear either when I'm during the round or in between rounds is if I hear that, I need to trust that, okay, it's accurate, and I trust that they know me, they know what I, they know my style, they know what I'm looking to do, what my goal is here, and I trust that what they're saying, their perspective on the fight from the outside is gonna, that tied in with like them knowing me is gonna be accurate, so I'm just gonna do it without question. When it comes to just teaching like your average everyday person, I think the there's got to be a way you got to be able to connect to people to some extent, but I think a lot of it has to do with how you explain it. It's got to be concise. It's got to be, it's got to resonate. A lot of times people use metaphors or analogies. I think that can be really good if you have a teacher who's using like analogies that resonate with you. That can help a lot.
Awesome. Excellent. My man, I really appreciate you being here and taking the time to talk. Where can people find you? Where can they connect with you on in real life? Maybe online?
Sure, yeah. In real life, my address is... No, I'm just kidding. So in real life, it's all real life, I guess, to some extent. But in person, if you want to train with me, I teach at Portland Thai Boxing and Martial Arts. The website is www.pdxmuaythai.com. We have a free week trial going on right now. You can sign up for that. And then you'll get a text from me with the schedule of classes you can choose from.
And that's here in Portland, Oregon?
Yeah, that's here in Portland, Oregon. It's on 6th and Cooch. So it's like just inner southeast.
Excellent.
Or inner northeast, rather. Sorry. I also teach, like I said, at Matt Dishman Community Center. That's on Knott Street in Williams. I teach there in the mornings on Monday, Wednesday, and Saturday. Mm-hmm. So if you're interested in checking that out, check it out. And then on social media, I pretty much just use Instagram. I have been fairly inactive as of late, but it's at gbander_PTB. So there you go, man. That's
excellent.
It. Dude, thank you. Where can people find you?
They can subscribe to this YouTube channel.
Yeah, do that.
Or subscribe on Facebook if we're going to be streaming on Facebook. But at George Mihaly on Instagram and Facebook. And that's it for now.
All right. Excellent. Dude, good stuff. Thank you so much, man.
My man. Appreciate you. I'm going to go turn off the live stream. And thanks for tuning in, everybody.
Cool.
Ooh, that was a beautiful shared conversation. I learned so much about Muay Thai and about Greg. If you enjoyed the show and you want to check out all the things that we talked about, including show notes, resources, and links to anything and everything that we were discussing, head on over to georgemihaly.com, where you'll find all the links and good stuff from this podcast and other podcasts. Thanks so much.